Welcome to the Relationship Manifesto podcast series.
Welcome back to the Relationship Manifesto podcast series. My name is Chris Smith, Shambles Guru on the interweb, and I'm with Dr. Stephen Whitehead.
Hi, Chris.
He's got this great big thick notebook covered in notes. This is going to be a 6-hour podcast by the look of it. Yeah. It's from the content of your notebook. This is episode 48, and we're going to continue our little series of looking at different decades in our life and relationships in the different decades. We've got up to the age of the 50s.
Did the 50s, yeah. So this is going to take us to the 60s, and there won't be one after this. This is sort of the cut-off point. Not that we're expecting you to be dead at 60, but that you could be. But I don't feel qualified to talk much beyond the early 60s. So, yeah, this is the decade where really that's had the most profound change, I think, over the last. Few years. The recent survey, just to put this in context, a recent survey came out that done in the UK government did, and it said that people under the age of 25 believe old age starts sooner than those over the age of 50, probably not surprising. On average, Britons believe that old age starts at 59, while youth ends at 41. However, it found that people over 80 believe that youth ends at 52, while old age starts at 68. we're looking at a time now when retirement for men and women is going on and on. It's going to be 66 in the UK by 2020. So the idea that we're old at 59, it belongs to a different era. It doesn't belong in the 2012s. We are on the brink of a new world here. People living longer, working longer, they're contributing more in later lives. And there's going to be an explosion of those people living over 100. And I hope I'm going to be one of them. And I hope you are as well, Chris. So at the same time as we've got people living longer and we've got these redefinitions of what it means to be old, and we can, I don't feel, I'm 62, you're 65, we both go.
I'm not 65, don't exaggerate.
Okay, 64 and a half.
Don't believe him. I'm 28.
Okay, he's 28. We are in that, lucky that we are in this, what they call now the alpha boomers, that age range, that a decade between 55 and 65, when we're redefining, making great efforts to redefine what it means to be 50 or 60. I don't feel old. I mean, I'm going out running, and I'm fit, and exercise, and living a full life. But, of course, there are qualifications on that, and I'm going to talk about some of those shortly, because it's not inevitable that you're going to be in your prime when you get past 55. But, nevertheless, we have got major changes, but what we haven't got a major change of is age discrimination. And I think that age discrimination is the acceptable-ism, if you like, in society, whereby racism and sexism are no longer acceptable, and they become very unacceptable, thankfully, across societies. Ageism still is that one where you can have a joke about someone being older. And there's all the stereotypes about you once you're past 40, you're past 50, the idea that you're past it somehow. And all these myths, these stereotypes still hold in people's imaginations. At the same time, we are very clearly in an area when there are some icons of the 50s and 60s in terms of the age who are still around and creative and very visible. The Rolling Stones, for example. I mean, if I come back in another life, I want to be the drummer with the Rolling Stones. I'm sorry, but I know I probably won't be as good as the one who is anyway. But look at Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. They're still going strong despite all the abuse that they've put into their bodies over the years. Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, David Bowie, Cliff Richard, Elton John, Sean Connery, women, Madonna, Meryl Streep, Tina Turner. You know, the list goes on and on and on. So these are people who are very visible, very successful, and they've made a major contribution to recreating and reforming our ideas of what it means to be in our 50s and 60s. And that's all great, because, you know, if you're looking at someone living to 100, and more of us are going to be, then 50 is your halfway mark. You might say, it makes sense to think that in your old age might be, it's going to probably be the last third of your life, so it's probably not going to kick in until you're in your 70s. I'm not near my 70s, so this is a wonderful time to be alive, to in an era of humanity when we can live longer, we can enjoy our lives, and we can enjoy it in relationships. However, that said, there are many people who still don't enjoy the relationships, even as they get older. I'd have to smile. There's one here that came to my notice, an Italian couple. The Italian man filed for divorce because he discovered his wife had an affair 70 years ago. They've been married for 77 years.
Oh, really?
He's 99, she was 96. So this divorce is currently going through, apparently. So, you know, you're never too old to split up, and you're probably never too old to get married either. Some of the big issues that pertain to age in the 60s and in your 60s, and I'll go through these. I think I'm not going to talk immediately about money, but obviously that's a factor. But self-image, your image of yourself, how you perceive yourself, what do you see when you look in the mirror? What's your mental perception of yourself as an individual? Do you feel youthful? I don't think it's so much about how old you are, it's how young you are, but how youthful you are. Because I've met young people who are not youthful at all, and I've met older people who are very youthful. So I think this is a mental state, and I think this is very important. You can maintain and develop a sense of youthfulness regardless of your years, and you see that with, you know, people who are in their 80s. Who maintain a youthful attitude. My own father's 92, 93, and he lives in the north of England on his own. He's a widower, and he's very active, and he drives, and, you know, he drives a little sports car.
So skydiving at the age of 80 is still a possibility?
But it is. I personally wouldn't do that, but anyway, yeah, if that's what you want. So self-image is very important, a positive self-image about yourself, about your youthfulness, about what your possibilities, not lose your ambition. This is very key. Have a positive self-image about your possibilities. I think the second one is social networking. And this, I think, this is where the age of the computer really is important, because I would advise anybody, obviously everybody, to have a computer, but I think it's very important for the older age group to have one. So you can social network virtually, you can social network in real time, and do both. You know, you've got your real friends and you've got your virtual friends, and some of them are both and some of them are not. And but the computer is a way of accessing into the great wide world, and with that now at our disposal, then, you know, you've got the world actually in your living room through the computer. And it doesn't have to be limited to watching Coronation Street at, you know, 6 o'clock on a Friday evening. You've got it all, you know, 24/7. It's wonderful. And that links to the third one, which is mental stimulation. I like doing Sudoku. I like playing chess. I like reading. I like working on a computer. I like writing. There's all forms of mental stimulation which help us stay young in our minds. Physical stimulation. Personally, exercise. I think going to the gym, going out for a walk with the dog, whatever. But as long as you keep fit, as long as you keep active. Excuse me.
What about climate, though? Do you think that makes a big difference? Because we're living.
Yeah.
Personally, we're living now. It's the middle of January now.
Yeah.
The sky is wonderfully blue. The sun's streaming in. The temperature's about 30 degrees outside. It's wonderful. And if I was in a cold northern climate. I wouldn't feel as good as I am now.
Well, I spoke. It's interesting you say that, because I spoke this morning. I have a phone call from a friend of mine, Roy Moodley, who works at Toronto University, and it's minus 20 there at the moment.
Oh.
Don't go to Canada in February or January. So he doesn't even want to go outside.
Mm.
You know, you go outside and you go to the Underground Railway and you go into your office and you stay out of the outdoors as much as possible. I take that point. At the same time, there's gyms, and I think there are, you know, you can, if we look at something we were talking about earlier, before the podcast. We look at the rise in obesity around the world, particularly in the West. It's not necessarily correlated with cold climates. So I think that there's, you know, the UK is quite a moderate climate. I lived there all my life until the last few years. And for 30 years, I've gone out running nearly every week, regardless of the weather, regardless of whether it's sun, snow, sleet, rain, whatever.
But that's not the norm, though, is it?
It's not the norm, but it's more. A lot of people do it. And I think even just going out for a walk, even if you're doing it a couple, two or three times a week, it's enough to get your body in tune, keep the muscles active, keep some body tone. I take the point. If it is extremely cold, then of course. But you know, apart from certain climates around the world, most of us we live in climates where we can get out sometime during the week, and often during the course of a month.
But it's strange for me, just waking up in the morning and the sun streaming through a window makes such a difference.
Don't say anymore. We don't want all the retirees coming to the
It's such a pleasure waking up in the morning.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's, well, I was going to talk about health and fitness. I think the other the part that's fitness, the health thing is, of course, diet and protein supplements or vitamin supplements if you wish to take them. But being aware of your health, and I don't think it's a problem being fussy about your health. I know the NHS in the UK has this term, the worried well. The people are they're constantly worried about the health, but they're actually quite well.
Okay.
I don't think there's a problem with that. Be worried well if you have to be. It's because it's better to be having the test and making sure you're okay rather than.
These are not hypochondriacs.
Talking about hypochondriacs. We're talking about people who are just conscious about their well-being and just going to go for a checkup and. Okay. there is the element of friendship. I think if you are, it's good to be sociable. I think, again, that links back to the social networking. Have strong friends. You need some people you can call on, you can communicate with, not just about the everyday things, but about some of the big issues in your life. And I think if you've got a network of friends, not just a peripheral network that might be a social network, virtual world, but two or three close people who you can call on who are part of your circle, where they may well be family or they may not.
Do you think people do have close friends or do they have lots of acquaintances?
I don't think we need many close friends, people who you would share every aspect of your life with. I think most of us have a number of acquaintances and within that group between the very, very close friend and the acquaintance sits this larger body, maybe, of friends who you may not see a while. The interesting thing about friendship is that it's not something that needs a major investment constantly. It's not like a relationship, a love relationship, whereby if you're living with someone or you're making that commitment, an emotional commitment of intimacy and sexuality with someone, that takes work and effort and obviously a commitment. Friendships can come and go. I mean, the Roy, who is my friend in Toronto, we've not spoken for two or three months, but it's not going to diminish our friendship. We phones, we speak, we've got 20 minutes on the phone, we might have an email, a couple exchange over the course of the next 2-3 months, but I'll still make the effort to go and see him in Toronto at some point in the future, or he'll come to Chiang Mai. It's a friendship that's lasted 15 years, 20 years, but it's an easy one. I'm not living with him, he's not living with me, so the commitment is a different level. But I think most people have acquaintances and friends with one or two small close friends who are very intimate.
Yeah. Is it a taken that your best friend is your partner?
No, absolutely not. And often it can be your partner is not your best friend. You can be living with someone and you can be in a relationship which is comfortable and amenable, but there might be someone else in your life who you're closer to emotionally and physically, not physically, emotionally and intimately. This other person is not talking necessarily about a sexual relationship, but it could just be two guys who are very buddy-buddy, both straight, and both got wives. But
yeah. Back to the 60s, though.
Yeah,
60-year-olds.
Okay.
The wrinklies. Because you're starting to turn into a wrinkly at the age of 60.
Well, that's why, look at health. I had face cream. I've been using face cream for many years, probably from the early middle, certainly from the middle 80s.
60-year-olds start considering facelifts.
Yeah, I don't. So I would have a facelift if I needed it.
Ladies and gents, he's fondling his own chin here. He's just checking that it's still
I'm okay.
Yeah.
But I would. What I would be afraid of is if I lifted my face and then it dropped even further later on or sometime in the future.
Okay.
But anyway, I think the other thing is being around young people, that helps you. If you're in your 60s, 70s, if you can be around young people, that's good. Some of my best friends are in their 20s, 30s, and that's important to me. And the other thing, of course, is sex and erotic pleasure. And have a, keep an active sex life. And
Stephen, it took us 15 minutes to get to that sentence. You're a bit slow this week, aren't you?
Yeah, a bit slow, yeah. But sex...
Can 60-year-olds have sex and erotic pleasure?
I told you about this. Yeah. Bloody hell. I mean...
I've been listening. Come on, say it. Haven't you been listening?
Haven't you been listening, yeah. No, I mean, I have sex 4 or 5 times
a week. No, I don't want to do
that. Yeah, you do. It's not.
But you must try it with somebody else in future.
I've long given up masturbation. I think there's no point masturbating if you're in Thailand.
This is degenerating.
It's degenerating.
It started off, I'm going to share my little joke from the beginning. Just before we started, I shared a joke with Stephen that I'd just received on the internet, which was a Dear Abby help letter, which was, Dear Abby, please help me. In the last, and it is related to this podcast series, in my house, I've walked in twice on my husband who's been masturbating in the toilet. What should I do? And Dear Abby's advice was, knock.
Yeah. Well, you don't need to. No. I think I like being. One reason why I like being in Thailand because it feels a sexual culture. But there can be a downturn to that, obviously. But you've got to be. And we talked about last week about the HIV and AIDS. But there's also the general incidence of STIs. But there's also the emotional stuff that goes off if you're playing around. I think at the same time, I think if many older people are coming out to Asia and getting partners, new partners, finding new love, finding new relationships, men and women, whatever sexuality, whatever sexual persuasion, I think that's very good. I think it's not so much the sex, it's about maintaining an adventure in your life, about maintaining the excitement, the quest for pleasure, the search for pleasure, not being prepared or settling down on the sofa with a can of beer, watching the soccer, becoming a boring old fart, it's about being lively and pushing back the boundaries. I'd say I've got young friends, men and women in the 20s or 30s are keeping contact with me. They're very close. I know for a fact they wouldn't bother with me if I was boring. I know for a fact they wouldn't take the time to email me, tell me about their lives, what they're doing, share stuff with me if they found me tedious. They just wouldn't do it. But then I draw from them. I give them, and they draw from me. I give them experience. I give them ideas. Give them perspective of the world that only someone at my age can have. But they give me an energy. They give me an enthusiasm. Their hope for the work, for the future, for themselves. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So it's a real positive exchange. If you're you're growing older, you don't necessarily have to grow old. You can grow older, that's fine. You can grow old and stay youthful, and that's the trick. Not to grow older and get old. I don't want to ever be old. Never. I want to be having sex on 100. And if my wife's not prepared, I'm off down to the Loy Court Road. Absolutely. And you can see me in my Zimmer frame down in Loy Court Road.
Right, the Zimmer tour.
The Zimmer tour, yeah. But it's, joking aside, why not keep that energy? And it's part of your physicality, it's part of your self-image. What's the issues? Well, the issues we haven't talked about, one is money, and one is I've talked about health, but money and work, really, because I think you've got to keep working. I don't think you retire. I mean, you might retire officially, formally, and you might draw your old age pension eventually, but actually retiring Retiring from what? Retiring from life? I don't think so. Retiring from work? Well, I don't. With the internet today, why would you need to? Because you're an expert at this. It's something you do very well, Chris. You know, you're retired like I am, but you know, you're not retired at all. You're working all the blinking time.
Well, the only difference is, Stephen, is that I don't have a boss.
You don't have a boss.
So actually,
that's right.
The retirement, if somebody says to me about retirement, yeah. For me, the definition would be you retire from having a boss.
You retire from having a boss, yeah.
And you become your own person.
That, for me, retiring was, and I love Keele University, and I had the best times of my work life at Keele University. I'm very grateful. Brilliant, and I'm glad to still be associated with Keele. I think it's a wonderful university, and I made some wonderful friends there. But it was, for me, I don't like being in. I'm not a good organisational man. I'm a bit independent minded. I can be a bit of a rebel, and that's not gone away with the years. And so for me, retiring was about coming out here, living a different lifestyle. Starting a new adventure, a new pathway.
But retiring is the wrong word, 50s. Isn't it? It's just a transition.
It's just a transition.
It's not a retirement.
And that's right. I think absolutely important that we recognise that. Because it is this connotation of retiring is cut off, finish, end, full stop.
I blame society for some of that, especially the sort of money aspect where it's encouraging you to save up until you're 65 and then you can enjoy your life. It's getting too late then. You know,
I think
Yeah, it's crazy. Enjoy it. Whoever's listening to this, whatever their age that you're at now, you know, we only go around once, unless you're a Buddhist. We only go around this roundabout once.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a bit of a cliche, but this carpe diem, you know, seize the day.
Seize the day, absolutely.
It's sound advice.
That's something I've done, and I would hope my own kids do it. I can see they are doing it. It seems to be indicating that there are. And there's opportunities now to do it for travel, for exploring new cultures, meeting new people, crossing, breaking the boundaries.
Mm.
The social constraints that surrounded our grandparents and parents are not there so much now. Again, money's an issue. You know, you need money coming in.
Yes.
And
yeah, so it's nice. It's all good and well saying travel is there, but if you can't afford
the
plane fare,
you've got no money. Yeah. No, if you're living on the state pension, then it's not going to be very nice.
Yeah. Although you can ride on the trams for free in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Apparently, yeah.
After the age of 60, I think.
Yeah.
And on the MTR.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Lots of schemes like that.
I know. I've known friends of mine who older than me who retired and did retire from work, and they left the UK, they sold the house, and they just went, they didn't need a home.
Some older people, interesting term, older people, some older people, their priority starts to focus on their family. Is that a healthy thing? They start to sort of dote on the, in fact almost they become babysitters for grandchildren so that their children can actually continue their careers in the way they'd like to. Do you think this is a healthy thing to do?
I can't see it not being healthy. It as long as that individual who's doting on the family is got a rounded life, you know, you don't want to really be coming once it, bringing children up is hard work, and one thing you will find as you do age is you've got less tolerance to be with young children. Very young children, babies. You can't put up with the noise, with the screaming, with the tantrums, with the general chaos that circulates around 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds. You can't do it the same.
I'm surprised at that because I have a picture of the doting grandparents.
Well, that's because you've never been one, Chris. Believe me.
Probably true.
It's not fun. And I think I've got many friends who are in my age range. And they are grandparents, and they'll say they love it. They want to see the kids, but don't want to be there 24/7. They enjoy
just between 2 and 4 every Sunday.
Whatever it is, yeah. And it's just becomes debilitating. You don't have the physical energy for it. So as long as you've got a balance, then fine. I think if you're the grandparent and you're picking up all the childcare.
And work. You're becoming a full-time taxi driver.
And full-time taxi driver and all the rest that goes with it for, you know, a young baby, a young child. I think that's asking a lot. No, I think you've, you, Again, having babies, having children for the first time in your 50s, I don't think it's a good idea, personally. I think the 40s is your cut-off point, simply because you've got the physical limitations. And you should be looking after yourself and, you know, paying attention to your own needs. Mm. But being around children, of course, it's itself highly stimulating, if exhausting, and it's a very positive thing. And if it gives you a buzz, gives you... injects energy into your life and enthusiasm, then fine, go for it. And I think it's a wonderful experience. You know, I'm not a grandparent, and I would like to be a grandparent. So, you know, kids, soon. Can you please get down to it? And that's but having said that, I wouldn't want to be a grandparent with the child there all the time. I would, you know, come in and do the grandparent bit, but then go away.
Right,
go back to my computer.
A part-time proxy parent.
Yeah, absolutely. That's because I've done the full-time bit, so right. That's my time's finished of doing full-time parenting.
So, any other advice for? Let's say we've got the people in their late 50s, who the 60s are just around the corner.
My advice would be to start something new, either go and live somewhere new, start a new hobby, start a new love affair. Don't think that when you're getting past 55 that you've done it. It might be you've done some of the big things in your life, the big creative things, the big career moves, the big family developments, having children and all the rest of it. It might be that you've done that. But, you know, there's other stuff you can do. You can learn a new language. You can learn to play the piano or the guitar. You can go out and do some of the trekking that you might have wanted to do in Borneo when you were younger, but you didn't do. And you can still do that when you're 50s and 60s. Why not? Or even just going and visiting another place, you know, making contact with people on the computer.
Yeah, learn to drive an iPad.
do these things. And it's, you know, if you've always snorkeled, well, okay, learn to dive. If you've always liked walking up mountains, learn to abseil. Mm. You know, just take it to that next stage. But again, it's. I don't think it's so much about the money. I think money's important, but a lot of things can be done very cheaply. It's about your mental state, the positive attitude.
Yes.
And that if you've got old in your head, if you've switched off in your head, if you've mentally switched off, then that's when you're getting old.
Yes.
And you don't have to mentally switch off. I will mentally switch off one day, and then that's when the lights go out.
Right.
But not before then, I hope.
So the 60s is no longer God's waiting room.
Absolutely not.
The God's waiting room has now moved to the 90s or...
Well, God can wait as long as he likes. I'm not ready. And I think as far as... I'm not... If he's waiting... He can wait for me. I'm not waiting for him.
That's a nice way of putting it. Okay. Actually, for me, I have this vision of John Cleese waiting at the pearly gates for me. It's a nice picture, actually, but we'll see what
I don't. I think, you know, none of us know what's coming around the corner. You know, we don't know how long we've got here. And I'm talking like this, and it could be over in 24 hours. You just don't know. Mm. But it won't matter, really, if it's over in 24 hours, because... It's up till now, I've done everything I wanted to do, and I've got no regrets.
That was a phrase I was just going to throw at you. No regrets.
No regrets. That's no right. Regrets. And just go for it. And if it all finishes, then okay. I'm okay with that. I don't want it to finish yet, and I'm hoping I've got another 40 years.
Yes.
But I may not have. But that's not stopping me today, tomorrow, having plans and going forward, and, you know, and having an exciting life that I want to bring fulfillment.
Yeah, I think to bring this to a close, I think the things I would I agree with nearly everything you say. I think you know, being positive is so important, and it's in your head.
It is, yeah.
And it's a repeat. You know, being positive in about life and enjoying it and taking what you can out of it, because we only have, you know, we do only have one time around here, and. Don't waste it.
Don't waste it, no.
Don't waste it. And I think the no regrets aspect is, if you can say that you, whatever age you're at, whatever age you're at, if you can say no regrets, that says a lot about yourself. Well done.
I mean, just finishing on the sex point, I think I find I'm enjoying sex as much now as I've ever done. I was a late starter with sex. I didn't start until about 18, 17. But I've been motoring really since my 40s. But the sex now, at my age, is great, and I love it. And, I'm as active as ever was. More so. So, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds listening to this, I said before, it's all to come, and just keep yourself fit.
Ladies and gentlemen, should I wind him up for another minute by just saying the word Viagra?
Yeah. Viagra's wonderful. I think, taking a stimulant like that, you can take Viagra, or there's many other similar substances available, which are a lot less money here in Thailand, and they're very effective. Not because you need it in order to get an erection, but it's a sex aid, it's a sex stimulus, because you take something like that and you're active for a lot longer. I know many people do, and many young people take them who are not physically need it. I mean, the idea you take Viagra because you're old, or it's partly a medical substance, but it's also an aid to sex. It's like KY jelly or whatever, and it's just it's great. We've got no pregnancy. We're in that age. You don't have to worry about pregnancy. Our sperm count, in my case, my sperm count is zero because I had a vasectomy, and you've got substances like Viagra if that's what you want. So
Find it very much
that's
more
why you've got a smile on your face.
No, I'm just thinking at the KY jelly. It's much more difficult to swallow, right? We should bring it to an end then, ladies and gents. On that note, it's a very apt note to finish it on. What did we finish it on? We finished on Viagra.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the start of the story. And what we're going to do now, though, is actually we're going to take a break from the podcast series for a while. We're not sure how long it is. We both got lots of other projects on, which are making it more difficult for us to devote the time. The only thing that might jolly us up is if a sponsor came along and said, we'd like to sponsor the podcast series. If there are any sponsors out there, please do get in touch with us. That might jolly us along to come back together and continue the podcast series earlier than we might do.
Mm. Yep.
So it's not the end of the journey, it's a break. Sorry, I'm just looking at Stephen, and I remember thinking once back, how many episodes would he would he keep going? And we've done 48. I think we could get into a lot more.
Keep going.
Yeah, I think you could keep going forever. It's just keep pressing the buttons, right?
Yeah.
Just keep.
Well, you've learned that which buttons to press, Chris. That's for sure.
Keep taking the pills. Yeah, okay, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you sometime in the future, not next week.
Au revoir.
Au revoir, and remember the podcast will stay online, series, sure. And the blog will stay online at relationshipmanifesto.postgres.com, and the book will be online, and also Stephen's future books, keep a check on
because I'm busy writing
on Google to see what is, and his blog to see what's going on. That's it, Stephen, thanks very much.
Thanks everybody who's been listening, and look forward to catching up with you in the next installment of these podcasts sometime in the future. When we're no longer old.
Yeah. When we're 90.
When we're 90.
This recording is part of a Relationship Manifesto podcast series with Chris Smith and Stephen Whitehead.